Tweet at TodaySOR.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella.
Ah, the wonderful Dean Martin there. And Amore was also the name of the boat which drove George Clooney and his wife Amal around the canals of Venice this week. But it's to Venice we go to now. For if there's one city that's fit enough to handle the wedding of someone like George Clooney, well then it's there, a city shimmering in watery delights and historical intrigue that we thought we should turn our attention to. With me now, Fionn Davenport, Irish Times travel writer. Fionn, you, unlike a lot of people, me included, have had a chance to sample the delights of Venice.
Several times, actually, over the years.
It's different, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yeah. And it's one of those places, I think, that... It's unlike any other. Now, you can say that about a lot of places. You can say that about Machu Picchu. You can say it about Angkor Wat. But it's one of those places that don't really stand comparison. Or rather, it's used often to compare, to say about other places, like St. Petersburg is the Venice of the North, or, you know, anywhere is the Venice of somewhere else. But it's never Venice. And that's something, and anyone who's been to Venice will know how terribly unique this place is. And I use the word unique very sparingly here. You started off with Amore. You could just as easily start with Mahler's Fifth Symphony, that adagio movement from Death in Venice, which kind of speaks to the decay and the sadness of a city that's literally sinking under its own weight. So there's a sense that now is visit Venice now before it's too late. Not that Venice is going to disappear anytime soon, but I think
it's a series of islands. That's the first thing to know.
Okay, there's many, many islands, but there's four kind of big ones. And there's the Lido, which stretches across. I mean, an unlikely place for a city you've never seen. Like, you think, like, what kind of madness builds a city here? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. But yet, the city has worked. It's been around for 1,500 years and more. It's one of the things I like, and people tend to go, you spend 2-3 days in Venice, and it can leave you very dissatisfied because you go with enormous expectations, because you're going, this is going to be a trip of a lifetime. I'm going to see things that I've never seen before. And before you know it, there's 1,000 tourists standing on the bridge of sighs, all hosting up a parasol against the sun, and you can't see anything. You're overcrowded. You're looking to buy food, and it's warmed up pizza on St. Mark's Square. And before you know it, you start to hate the place.
And you're surrounded by water.
And you're surrounded by water, and you're like, oh my God, get me off this bloody place. And that's one of the terrible things about Venice, is that Venice strains and groans under the weight of its own success.
You're not doing a great sales job
so
far. What's the best time of the year to go there?
Well, what I'm trying to do is I want to be realistic, because you don't want to be going, January is the best time to go. And I'll tell you why. The tourist season, we're just coming out of it now. Really, it lasts until around the 4th of November. But it runs from Easter, more or less, onwards. So the crowds, millions and millions of people come. So during the summer months, it's very hot, it's overcrowded, it's overpriced. January, on the other hand, is when the city is at its quietest. I think it's at its most beautiful. And just to bear, you want to get up really early, at least one of the mornings. You walk across St. Mark's Square, and the cafes, you have the waiters are starting to open up. They might be washing a bit of water from overnight rain away from the paving stones. And you have the pigeons that are kind of just settling on the square, and you have the basilica right there. You have the Doge's Palace on the other side. And you realise this is as beautiful a scene as I've ever seen anywhere in the world.
And you're freezing.
But it's not that cold. It's fine. It is a little bit cold. But I mean, wear a nice coat. Sean, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing.
Like I said, there's no such thing as a bad question. Yeah. Just a bad answer.
Indeed.
So, let's say you go there in the off-season. What are the must-sees and must-dos?
Well, the obvious ones are the Ducal Palace, where the Doges lived. And these are all kind of centred around St. Mark's. I mean, of the many, many things that it has, it's got this wonderful stairway lined in 24 karat gold. It's got artwork works by Veronese and Tiepolo and these great Renaissance artists. It's also one of the things, the highlight for me is you can go and just visit it, but the secret passages tour is the one I'd recommend. Now, the Doges, I mean, this is, you want to talk about nepotism, intrigue, corruption. Venice mastered these arts and how. So you have this Doges palace with all these secret passages that lead in so you could observe other rivals machinating away. And so you get the tour and you get to see exactly how Venetian power worked. You also get brought to the prison, the attic prison where Casanova, the famous Casanova, was imprisoned for whatever it was, 6 or 8 months. He was a master of intrigue as well. So, and he escaped, and the story of his escape is part of the tour, and it's kind of an interesting one. But so the Ducal Palace is definitely there. The Basilica, I mentioned it before. Now, St. Mark's, this is, it's hard to say. It's like, I almost think that two eyes aren't enough really to experience it. It's got 800 years old. It's got 8,500 square meters of mosaic. I mean, to visit and appreciate St. Mark's Basilica, you'd need weeks and weeks and weeks to go. Unfortunately, most people just give it a couple of hours, which is plenty to get a sense of it. And then of the many, many art galleries, there is the Peggy Guggenheim collection, I think, is very, very good. But the one I'd say, if you're going to pick one, it's the Galleria dell'Accademia, which is the famous art museum. It's the equivalent of the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. It's the equivalent of the Louvre. This is in Venice. And it's got Veronese's Last Supper. It's got this wonderful, it's got Titian's Presentation of the Virgin. It's got the famous Venetian paintings. And again, it's worth going to see. So there, I'd say, if you're going on the three big highlights, they're the ones. I mean, there's so many churches, Sean, to check out. I mean, I could list them all, but there's a sense of like an overloading of information.
So that's on the main island?
Yeah, on the main island.
Further afield?
Yeah, what I do is if you're going further afield, there's really, you'd want to go the two. The two, Murano and Burano, are two outlying islands. And I would strongly urge anyone going to Venice to visit these two. Murano is famous for its glass. And they've been making glass there for 1,000-odd years. And even though, I mean, the glass is kind of pricey. It's not to everybody's taste. But some of it's very, very beautiful. There's a museum there that shows you how the glass is made. You can watch glass blowers. The other big one is Burano, and Burano is an adjoining island, and this is the photographer's delight. Everybody gets the Vaporetto there armed with cameras, because along the canal, on the Fondamente, which is the canal banks, you have these multicoloured houses, these beautiful houses in all different colours. And in decent weather, if there's a bit of sun shining, it's the picture that people want from Venice. It's also, Sean, great relief if you are visiting in summer from the craziness of St. Mark's Square and the crowds that go there, so people escape there.
What about getting round?
Right, okay. Well, I would suggest the obvious one is by water. Now, you have to take to the water. The Vaporetto, which is the public bus system in Venice, it costs €2 or cheaper. I mean, you can buy passes, etc. It's the best way to see the city, by a mile. So you go up the Grand Lagoon and you kind of go round. And so you do that. The other way is to walk. Now, people think, oh, I'm not going to walk in Venice, but there's the main kind of thoroughfares that lead from the main areas to each other, from the Canadeggio, say, to St. Mark's or so on and so forth. You have the main thoroughfares, but they're clogged with people. So what you do is get lost, go off into the little alleyways, the squiggly little alleyways that run kind of alongside the thing. And don't worry if you're kind of lost. You're never going to get truly lost. And generally, if you want to find your way back to a main road, just follow a crowd. Like, you'll see them. And that's, I think, where the secret of Venice's beauty really is on these little paths that, I mean, if you can use a phone or a smartphone with a GPS, like, it'll absolutely outsmart that, because you'd be looking going, oh, I think it takes a right here. No, it doesn't. And before you know it. So ignore the GPS and just kind of wander, because I think. And then finally, of course, the gondola. And the gondola is €80. There's no haggling. You don't haggle with a gondolier.
What do you get for the €80?
You get a half hour on a gondola, right? And for an extra 20, they'll sing for you, right? Now, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of
how many can you fit in the gondola?
You can fit, I guess, 4, but why would you want more than 2? That's the whole point.
Chances are you're only going to be going with one other person.
But the idea, and I don't know, I've spoken to many an Irish person about this, and there's something, it's a little bit, you know, when you're on a romantic meal out and you say, and you think, this is a great idea, I'm going to hire a violinist to come over and serenade us. After about 40 seconds, it's like, oh, okay, right, now stop. You need to stop this. I think it's the same with the gondolier singing to you, because, like, it's lovely, €80, you're kind of wandering around, and then for an extra 20, he's going to sing to you. But, like, after, like, 4 bars, you're like, okay, that's it. But yet, people seem to like it.
What about, what's your advice, Sean, on eating well?
Okay, eating well in Venice, this is the problem. There's an enormous amount of price gouging and setting up. a lot of the kind of touristy restaurants are dreadful. I mean, really, really dreadful. You can eat in traditional restaurants, of which there are many, not many around St. Mark's, or what I would recommend. Eat at, in the evening time, pick a nice sit-down restaurant, and I have a couple of recommendations. But the other one is to try the Bacari, or these backstreet bars, because what a lot of people don't know is that Venice is famous for its tapas, and it's called Cicchetti. And really beautiful, and the bars do them. You generally get them at lunchtime in the evening times, show up around noon or around half six, otherwise they all disappear. In the evening time, now, I think maybe you might want to post some of these notes that I have here up on the website.
Oh, no, we have every intention of it, yes.
Because I think that's a good idea, rather than kind of just having people scribble down names. But I have a list of these bars, these Bacari and restaurants, which are really, really good. The two restaurants I'd recommend, one of them is called the Osteria La Staffa, and the other one is called Antiche Carampane. Now, this is two of many. What I would say is if you do go to these restaurants, ignore the menu. Don't bother with the menu. Ask the waiter about seasonal dishes and house specials. They will be thrilled to give you what's on offer.
And drinking, Fionn, if one likes to imbibe, would you avoid the famous Harry's Bar?
Yeah, I mean, you can pop in, sure. I mean, I never say to avoid, but I just think is if you think that Harry's Bar is the last word in a drinking experience in Venice, you'll be sorely disappointed. What I will say about drinking is try local wines, which we've never heard of because they're never exported, but they're all made in the local region.
One other question.
Sure.
To come back to where we started, George and Amal, I gather they stayed at the Cipriani. Now, maybe slightly more within the
I mean, obviously, and Cipriani and Harry's Bar and all. And sure, what I would say is definitely pop into the Cipriani to have a look at how beautiful it is. I have three recommendations. For a budget, I've got a B&B called Just San Marco, which is really, really good. In a mid-range price, so around the from the 130 to 200 euro, is a beautiful 16th century palazzo called Casanardi. And if you want a top range, yes, you can go there. But the really top hotel, and I'm surprised George didn't say there, it's the Gritti Palace. To me, it's the best hotel in Venice by a mile.
And you'll be paying how much for the pleasure?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm staying in a suite, so it's 1,100 euro a night. I'm kidding. I have no more. I think I've got a chance to look inside one of the suites once, and they are as spectacular as the price suggests.
Okay, well, look, that's just a slight skim along the waters of Venice
indeed.
And the delights that it has to offer. Fionn Davenport, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Fionn, of course, travel journalist with the Irish Times and also host of the Irish Times weekly travel podcast. You can get it on iTunes. God, this is a big plug. Or at irishtimes.com/lifestyle. But anyway, you get the bones of it here on our own website. Fionn, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Sean.
We'll be talking about how to be happy at work after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.